Hello and welcome back to episode 14 of Scottish Football Covered. It has been quite the weekend in Scottish football. We've had derbies, we've had red cards, we've had teams losing, teams winning. First of all, I'm going to start by introducing myself. I'm Mac and I'm joined by Finlay today. Finlay, how are you?
I'm fantastic. This has been one of my favourite ever Sundays in Scottish football.
It's been one of my least favourite days, erased. But I'm that excited to talk about it, I nearly forgot to introduce you to the people. But we'll start at the granddaddy of Scottish football for fixtures. It was the Old Firm, the Glasgow Derby, Celtic 2, Rangers 3. It's the first time Rangers have won at Celtic Park since, I think it's the COVID year of 2020, and the first time Celtic have been defeated at home domestically this season, first time since Hearts beat them 2-0. In 2023. Finlay, going into this game, I'm not sure people expected much from Rangers, did you?
No. I thought that fans would be going into it thinking damage limitation. I think they would have seen that 2-2 would have been disappointing given leading 2-0. But I think after the exertions of Thursday, it's so difficult to go to any ground on that short turnaround, let alone Celtic Park, playing away against the champions, the runaway champions, I might say. And to get 3 points is an incredible result. And it maybe takes like maybe a bit of an anesthetic on what has been an incredibly painful season so far.
No, true. It's going to be a great season for Rangers. I think that's, it went well with Celtic having such a brilliant season. Celtic probably surpassed their expectations, but they certainly did at the start of the season, even though they're expected to be up there. But I think just how dominant they've been took us to everybody by surprise. But they certainly were dominant yesterday. Nico Raskin opened the scoring about 3 or 4 minutes in, and then he would set up Diamande later on in the half. It's just, what exactly do you think went wrong for Celtic, Finlay? Because I felt it was a very pragmatic approach with Barry Ferguson. It was almost like the side he played in under Walter Smith. So what do you think it was that went wrong or went right for Rangers?
Well, the first thing, I mean, maybe we'll start with Rangers. And that is something that's changed since Clermont and left. And I think that's work rate. And it might be cliche in a way to say, oh, they work harder and that was it. My players weren't fit. All those kind of, you know, those key phrases, those buzzwords come about when a new manager is introduced. But I think that was true. And I think a lot of players, it's the small things that you notice. A lot of those players were tracking back when previously you wouldn't have seen some of them making the runs back. And I think the key to that, well, the person who embodied that most was Dujon Sterling. And that's a player we've not really seen this year. I expected him. I had him earmarked as part of that back four. And a lot of fans will be wondering where he's been. And whether it be performances or injury niggles, this has not really been the season that people expected from him. But he was immense defensively, because I think, and I don't want to go into slagging off Jeff T, defensively, he has been caught far too many times. Dujon Sterling is the antithesis of that. He worked incredibly hard to get back. He made a block off the line. And I think it was just one of those performances where everyone bought in and worked well together. And on the counter, they were clinical and they accepted that they weren't going to touch the ball. And that, for a lot of teams, that would hurt your pride to see your rivals have all of the possession to be the dominant side. They were happy with that. That was the plan going in. And essentially, they stole 3 points that Celtic were expecting. So I give credit to Barry Ferguson here. They put in an immense shift and they completely deserved those 3 points. I know Brendan Rodgers said it could have been, a draw would have been fair. But I'm not sure. I think maybe he equates chance creation and possession with how deserving his side were.
No, I think you're buying on. It's Barry Ferguson's came in and he's just done. He's done what's asked of him. It's to create a bit of feeling about the place, and he's certainly done that. It's just, I think it was, I was listening to Open Goal, and I think it was Paul Slane, all people, he says, see all the big games that Rangers have won this season, like when they beat Celtic, they've beat Celtic twice, and then the big results in Europe, they've always had less of the ball, less possession, which is unusual and uncharacteristic of a typical Rangers team, but that's the way it's working, and they're tapping more into that dark arts side of the game to get results, and they've done that really well yesterday, I thought. Second half, they were the only team that showed up in the first half, but second half, you know, kind of there was deflation around Celtic Park, but you've always had that in the back of your mind. So if there's any team that can come back from this, it's going to be Celtic. Came back, got levelled at 2 each. It was Daiza Maeda and Real Hatate. Daiza Maeda, just he's the man. Everybody's talked about Finlay. Drew, he was probably the shining light of a poor Celtic team. Drew, I know we spoke about it last week, but do you think there's going to be a lot of interest in him in the summer, and do you think he'd want to stay at Celtic?
Yeah, I absolutely think there's going to be interest in him, same as there is going to be for Nicholas Kuhn. I think there are two players that everyone will be going after. Whether or not he will go, I would say I would be leaning towards yes. I think Champions League football is fantastic, and I'm sure that's a great ambition of his. But you could have said the same thing about Kyogo, who left in January, which was a big surprise because a lot of people would have thought, why don't you wait for the knockout stages? But I think sometimes people take maybe a rose-tinted view of the game because Maeda is a person who, has ambitions and maybe he has financial ambitions, which is odd to say. But if someone comes in and maybe doubles his money or gives him a more, I don't know, wouldn't you do the same thing? Wouldn't you go? And we're speaking hypothetically, of course, no offers that we know of have come in. But if you can be set up for the rest of your life and play for maybe a good team in Europe, you might take that. And I'm despite the fact that you might lose out on European football if you're tempted by the right project.
I was quite surprised. I thought Tottenham Hotspur would have came in for Kyogo or Daiza Maeda just because it's purely lazy, but it's just a link with Ange. But he's seen them across his career. He knows what they can do, and they could do worse than play for Tottenham. You know what I mean? Tottenham, can they buy a win right now? As we remind our Archie all the time.
I know. I wish he was here because that 2-0 against Fulham was.
We'll be listening and he'll be shaking a hand to the sky, listening to us. But Eggerman, he got a late winner. It was by a goal. It was just defensive faulties though from Celtic, I would say, but it's a great finish, isn't it, Finlay?
Yeah, no, it's incredible. A few touches, kind of one of those highlight reel finishes. And plus the timing and the pressure at that moment, very impressive. It really is. I think he's a top-class striker and he's still very young and still in his first season at Rangers. And if he stays next year, he could, be even better. But I think he deserves immense credit at that moment to be able to deliver where not a lot of other players will have been able to.
It was just he. I know there was two mistakes that I mentioned, but with a cut, I think Carter Vickers doesn't win the header, then Johnson slips. But he's still got a lot to do, and he gets onto his preferred foot. And I don't think it's all cliche, but two goalkeepers wouldn't have saved that. So that won the game for Rangers. The gap's now 13 points. So I think it's just too little, too late for Rangers to salvage a comeback in the title race. But look, it lifts expectations going into the last derby of the season. And going into next season, one thing that remains uncertain though is who's going to be in the dugout next season. Barry Ferguson is obviously just the interim manager, but performances like Fenerbahce away and Celtic away, they're going to do his chances no harm, aren't they, Finlay? Do you think he'll be here beyond this season?
I would hope if I were a Rangers fan, I think they've been quite realistic about this. A lot I've kind of been reading, been keeping up with what they've been saying, and a lot of them are very grateful and they are very happy for Barry Ferguson. They think it's a fantastic result. Not a lot of noise saying that he should be permanent. There is a kind of awareness that Barry Ferguson's CV has its limitations and that a few good results don't really undo those. And people are saying, and I don't think wrongly, that it would be good to have him back at the club in some other capacity because culture is a massive thing. He has experience as a player of winning, and that's something that's been missing with players. He's definitely done some good for them. I just don't think he's top quality managerial material as of yet. It might do him good for that development to be in the coaching staff in the future. The one thing I would also say is just Rangers will need to kind of avoid trying to please people only to then have to maybe sack him this time next year, because the results that he's gotten so far, that one against Fenerbahce, the one against Celtic, those are results that Philippe Clement got. Philippe Clement did very well in Europe. Philippe Clement beat Rangers, like, sorry, beat Celtic 3-0. So it's nothing necessarily new under the sun, and it's definitely not a reason to give him the job as of yet. We're still a long way from the end of the year.
No, I agree. If it's way too early to be making the decisions, and it's backfired on a lot of clubs in the past. I think Barry Robson got the Aberdeen job after an interim charge never went too well for him. To a wider extent, you could argue Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he got the job, and then as soon as he got the job permanently, just his performances kind of nosedived. But it's way too early, but he's definitely got to be in consideration. I think he's surpassed expectations, even though this early. But got to remember as well, he's not won at Ibrox yet, hasn't he? No, I don't think he's lost to Motherwell and St Mirren, and obviously lost to Fenerbahce. So still got a long way to go. I personally don't think he's ready for it yet. But it could be a case of he stays within the club, and then when the next guy leaves or gets sacked, he could be the one picking up the pieces again. But from one derby to another. Go to up north to Dundee. It was Dundee United 2, Dundee 4. That was Dundee's first win at Tannadice since 2004, 21 years. Can you believe that? Lyle, well, before I get into the game, Finlay, this is game of the weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible. Dundee United, I mean, I know they've not been doing that well. They've been struggling a little bit, but Dundee have been abysmal. Ever since they got those points against Celtic and Rangers, it's not that they've just been losing games. They have been looking so bad in them, and they've looked like a kind of shell of themselves. And I couldn't really put my finger on what had been going on. And I think maybe the fatigue had something to do with it. But I think also the players started to lose confidence in themselves. They weren't really taking people on. Simon Murray never faltered. Simon Murray stayed consistent. But players like Aduwumi, who usually has been electric down the wing, just looked very quiet. And then all of a sudden, they've started to put that back together. And then it all fell into place at the weekend. That was an incredible performance from them. It wasn't just a win. It was a convincing win. They absolutely suffocated Dundee United. And I know there were mistakes within the game, but it was an all-round excellent performance from the away side. And like you mentioned, that is 21 years without a win at Tannadice. That's incredible.
No, it was not like the Dundee we've been used to. It was like that, like you touched on the side that we've seen score three against Celtic and take points off of Rangers. Slow, I'll just give a wee quick rundown of the game. Dundee, absolutely. I just used the word suffocated Dundee United in the first half. That's what they did. They came at the flying at the traps. Lyle Cameron thought he'd open the scoring. He'll be joining Rangers at the end of the season. VAR gave it offside. It's one of the ones. Yeah, it's made the right call, but it's just so frustrating because after the offside doesn't really gain an advantage at all because there's so many more passes before the goal, but the rules are the rules. Jordan McGee, the defender, must have got a nosebleed. He was that high up the park, but he's got a diving header, gives Dundee the lead. No less than deserved. Could have been two early on. Simon Murray missed an absolute sitter, but I think he was just off balance the way he takes it on the turn. The former Dundee United man back in Tannadice. Scott Tiffany, sorry, made it 2-0. It was an absolute rocket, and it went through. Is it Jack Walton's hands? Finlay, we spoke about Jack Walton before. He's just unlucky. He's been so good this season, but just wasn't a great performance from him today, was it?
No, and I sympathize with Jack Walton here because when I was 12 years old, I played in goal for my club, and someone took a shot from the halfway line and it slipped through my arms in exactly the same way. So if Jack Walton's listening now, I'll just tell him that I understand what it's like. Just keep your head up because it's not always going to be like that. And he has been, like you mentioned, otherwise excellent. It was just, it was a bit. sad to watch. I mean, that fourth one, it didn't go, it didn't end up counting. Another disallowed goal. But the one that bounces off and goes right past him, I think he wanted the ground to swallow him up there. But it's not his fault. Overall, that performance, not really his fault. That goal was difficult, but Dundee United, the players around him have a lot to answer for.
Yeah, definitely. Buck doesn't lie with him, but I think the buck lies with you for your mistake you made for your club when you were 12.
Well,
But
gonna ignore that.
Glenn Middleton got one back for the hosts. That's a brilliant goal. It's just what Glenn Middleton does, coming in inside, cutting on his left foot and just absolute fires into the top corner. I do like Glenn Middleton, but I think that's probably about his level. I don't think he can get a club better than Dundee United, really. But I'm digressing. Then McGee again, 2 goals. He'd only scored 2 goals all season, and then he struts up to Tannadice and scores a doubles his tally for the season. The defender was set into the game. You touched on it there via, no, yeah, you touched on that one. It was the one that got chopped off. It was almost 4-1 at half time. It was calamitous defending for Dundee, to say the least. But 3-1 going into the break. It was a different second half. It's a bit like the Celtic Rangers game, wasn't it? It was all Dundee in the first half, and then the second half, I think Dundee United got themselves back in the game. It was Trapinovski finished after Sam Dalby doesn't just score them, he sets them up as well. Who knew? But Dundee, I thought I'd need to watch the full game back, but I'm not sure if an equaliser ever looked coming. Simon Murray, though, he sealed the win with a penalty kick against his former club, obviously, as a Dundee fan, though. And then he runs the length of the pitch to celebrate. Finlay, love it or hate it.
No, love it, love it. You find that at the moment, and I don't want to speak for every league, but there is just this feeling, and I'm maybe being nostalgic as well, that football is becoming increasingly transitory and transactional, in that players come and go. And in Scottish football, it's a lot of players coming in from League Two, League One in England, or just other leagues in Europe, staying there for a year, even 2 years, and then off they go. And there's something about most squads, the way they assembled, you are having fewer and fewer players that you can relate to as a fan. And the academy products are increasingly few and far between. And hopefully that is something that the SFA address, because there is talent in Scotland. I think they're just being wasted, and clubs are not taking a chance on them. They're going for cheaper, quicker options elsewhere. So to have a player like Simon Murray, a boyhood fan, to show that passion, and I hope that somewhere in their kind of Grinch-sized hearts at the moment, Dundee United fans can appreciate how special that moment is, and they absolutely won't. And if they saw me, they would probably throw pebbles and stones at me. But I hope they can appreciate to a certain extent what it's like to have a player who loves your club just feel that intense passion and joy at scoring a goal like that, because it's such an important one. And we won't get into the career that Simon Murray has had, because he's had to work and claw his way to get to where he is. It's not always been a sure thing, his career. So I would love to see more Simon Murrays in Scottish football.
Well, I think if you're a Dundee United fan, you've just brought on your listening device, listening to Finlay saying that Simon Murray was right to celebrate in front of you. But no, I like it. I'm here for it. I think
Not all the time, but every so often.
I think it just says, but the game's kind of going away from players being emotional to more like robotic. So to see that, I think it's quite refreshing, and it's. If look, he'd been getting it stinking off Dundee United fans the whole game, so every right to give him a bit back. I'm gonna stay.
Well, I saw that. Sorry, I'm gonna segue quickly back to something we didn't touch on. And the kind of point of giving it back, Czerny's water bottle spray, which is not the case of boyhood fan celebrating in front of the fans, although it did make me laugh a lot. I don't know what you thought of that moment.
I think it's horrific. It's assault, and he should get to jail. And the 3 points should be deducted from Rangers as a result. That's my honest opinion. No, but well, there were obviously there was stuff thrown at the Rangers players, but I think it's just You can't. You can't. I don't think you can. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I don't think he was right to do it, but I can see why he's done it. It's harmless at the end of the day. It's just water, but then
Yeah. Well, in
it's.
the same way, Simon Murray, I think someone threw a vape at him.
But that's when it crosses the line, isn't it? I
Yeah,
think
that's
when it's
so that
like.
gives him all the more reason to jump in front of them.
And then I think when it's like when fans are usually like you've seen Lauren Shanklin get hit with a pie and all that. It's like stuff like I think pies and paper cups. You can it's just you get angry and you just throw them when you're actually throwing something that can hurt you or damage you. It's unacceptable. But I'm going to continue talking about Simon Murray. I was listening to him in Sports Scene. I think if Jonathan Sutherland made a good point. Do you think he's been overlooked by Steve Clarke? Because us clear Scotland need a striker, and with injuries they've got up front now, don't think it could be worse than giving Simon Murray a call. I know he had 33, but Steve Clarke I think gave Andrew Considine his debut at 33. So it's who would you like to see Simon Murray in the Scotland squad?
On a personal level, yes, I think that would be a lovely way to cap off the Simon Murray story. And I remember he's given a few debuts to older players, but I don't know. I as much as I love Simon Murray the player, I don't think technically he is in and amongst it on an international level. His work rate and his commitment are bar none in the league, but can you picture him in the Nations League Division A or trying to help Scotland qualify for a World Cup? I think he would be maybe a great asset to have in a squad. I just don't think he has international quality. And I think he would struggle at Celtic or Rangers. And I think that's why he's not made a bigger move elsewhere. That being said, I am not in love with Scotland's options at the moment. And I know George Hurst has been called up, not a goal scorer, but more of a kind of Lyndon Dykes with hair, but I still don't think he's that kind of he's good enough.
No, I don't think he's at the ilk of an international striker. I just thought in the context of the striker situation now, maybe, but there's obviously,
Stranger things have happened.
yeah, exactly. There's obviously a reason why he's not been in the squad before. I don't think he's at that level, but just with the way things are there now, yes, he is in good form as well. I think he's got more goals this season than Kevin has. But who is in the squad? So, but look. Steve Clarke's decision, not mine. Going to move down from Dundee to outside of Glasgow now as Motherwell took on St Mirren. That's a big game for the side and who could get a top six perhaps. Motherwell drew 2-2 with St Mirren coming back from 2-0 down. It was Boyd Munson and Phillips scored for the Pandas. Do you know what happened at half time, Finlay, in a big game and which can define your season? Almost, I think I said. I seen St Mirren get in the top six and you never. It's throwing points like that away is what it's going to cost you at the end of the season, is it, isn't it, Finlay? But it's stating the obvious.
No, but it's stating the obvious, but it's to a certain extent it's right. I don't think either of those two teams are going to make the top six, particularly because of games like these. Motherwell are recovering from a difficult run of form. And St Mirren, this is kind of the story of their season. They have had chances to get themselves up there, and just something has gone wrong for them every time. And at 2-0, the intensity that they played with, they looked a lot better than Motherwell. They could have even been more up. And then Motherwell score a goal kind of out of nowhere. That's a good goal from Callum Solitary, not the first. He does incredibly well on both of those. But those are St Mirren mistakes that lead to that. And I think they took their foot off the gas. And no manager will, sometimes players won't say that. They'll go, oh, no, we didn't see it as one. It looked like at 2-0, they thought we can kind of sit back and see this one out. And in defense, I don't necessarily want to pick out one player, but I think Alex Gogic maybe is emblematic of this season. He's not necessarily the force that he was last year. And I think St Mirren are in part struggling because last year he would have won his duels. This year he's looked like a little bit, maybe even 5%, 10% less than he had in previous years. And I think that is costing them.
No, absolutely. We know how good Gogic can be, is and he plays his role to perfection. That sort of enforcer in the middle of the park. But yeah, you just say they were beaten too easily for one of the goals. It's a brilliant goal for Slattery. You touched on it there. He grabbed a double, brought a score to two each goal. And then what I will say, I think under Stuart Kettlewell, you don't see Motherwell come back. It's just that interjection of belief with the new manager Wimmer that's probably helped carry the players to getting a draw. But I'm going to touch on, there was a red card 10 minutes to go. I'm going to touch on that. Tolisso Alassagna, the striker for Mirren, it's a second yellow, so VAR couldn't intervene. But my God, Finlay, have you seen it? It's an absolutely terrible decision, isn't it? I don't know how the referee's seen that and went, that's a yellow card.
Yeah, and if memory serves me, I would say the reason for that would be because they ran into each other, but it looked, I can correct me if I'm wrong, but Alessandro, he kind of jumps up in the air when he runs into him. But I agree, and I agree. I don't think that's a yellow card. That's maybe a foul, but to put Saint Mirren down to 10 men for that is incredibly harsh. But what surprised me a little bit more was that Stephen Robertson didn't really go for that. He didn't, where usually he would really kind of rile against the officials and VAR. He didn't really blame that for this draw and the dropping of points. And I think maybe that tells you a lot about how disappointed he was in the reaction from his players after going two up and coming away with just a point, especially now that top six is really starting to slip away from them, and there's just three games to go. And I think that might be the difference. That might be the death knell for them.
I don't see St Mirren getting top six. I'm not even too sure I see Motherwell getting top six either. I think it's all too little, too late. You mentioned Stephen Robinson there. Obviously, I was back visiting his former club. He had, I think it was 3 great years there, and they got them third place in that season. They got called off short by COVID. It's just, I mentioned it with Derek McInnes, and I mentioned it with Stephen Rob. I'm going to mention it with Stephen Robinson now. I don't know realistically how further you can take St Mirren. It's, and I think it's got to the point where he needs to get top six for it to be seemed a success. I think he set the standard that high. I don't know if he's the man to continue that going forward, but look, I can't say I watch St Mirren every week. St Mirren fans, if they're happy with him, then I don't see there's any reason to change. Going to move to a guy I just touched on there, Derek McInnes, his side hosted Hibs at Rugby Park in a 1-1 draw. Martin Boyle opened the scoring for Hibs. It was a lethal counter attack. Comes back on Mallet corner and then out of nowhere, Hibs on a 3-1 counter attack. Dylan Levitt finds Martin Boyle, who scored his only second goal this season, which is quite surprising. He feels if he's a figurehead of their attacks, but I think I heard that was his second goal this season. That was a Hibs side, Finlay, that was missing Nicky Cadden, who's been instrumental for them this season, and I think that's him 14 games unbeaten in the league. That 3-3 draw with Aberdeen is probably the biggest sliding doors moment of recent time, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. They are completely different since then. And all the qualities that they showed in the dying stages of that game, which I was lucky enough to have been at, are exactly what have carried them through. They've not always been the most impressive side. I think they struggle with chance creation. They don't have that player in the middle. I think maybe they expected Dylan Levitt to be that player when he kind of came back into the side. I think he's slightly off it quality wise. They have Nectore Triantis, who is industrious and not a bad player to have on the transition. But when they've had their chances, they've usually taken them. And to have Kieran Bowie back in the side has been kind of important for them. He scored a key goal, and he's not a bad physical presence to have up front. And so now, my worry, though, is for all of that good work, and Martin Boyle will come back to him, has been great. But after that, the way they kind of slowed down a little bit and didn't take their chances, whereas in previous games they would have. They've got a few draws in that run, by the way. I think they need to be careful to not assume that top six is a guarantee, because I think it is, but because I think they should be aiming for third, and it is absolutely theirs for the taking, because to when they have this run behind them, Europe is there for them. And it would be a shame if they were to end that great run by finishing fifth or sixth, because I think they're capable of a lot more.
Yeah, no, I think it is almost guaranteed that top six, but as you says, they have to be careful. And I think the thing with unbeaten runs as well, you try too hard to protect it that you concede a level of performance to get a draw. But I think you can't question the level of performance yesterday. I thought Hibs were absolutely brilliant. It was just a kick in the teeth. Before I go any further, I just checked my boys actually scored 9 goals in the league this season, so I have no idea where I get two from. But
Yeah, I was going to say, because he scored
yeah,
two against Rangers, or two against Motherwell, but I don't.
I know it never sounded right. I must have misheard the guy in Sports Scene, but because I know, like, I heard when I said that stat there, I was like, he scored in the Edinburgh Derby. That surely wasn't his first goal of the season. But anyway, his goal looked like to be the winner until the 92nd minute, I think it was. Fraser Murray. Against his former club. He's a guy that was kind of frozen out of Dermot McInnes' plans, and he's just, I think it was injuries, paved his way back into the side, and then he's been a mainstay since. He's been brilliant, isn't he, Finlay?
Yes, definitely. In a season of otherwise underwhelming and shadowy performances where players have looked nothing like that side that got them into Europe, or at least into the European qualifying rounds, himself and Bobby Wales and Bruce Anderson have been, for me, the three players that have really impressed and almost to a certain extent carried the others, because it's been an incredibly difficult season for them. And when I was looking into their performances, I realized that, like, in terms of home form, Kilmarnock are a top six team if the league were based on home form. But away form, and this is kind of what surprised me most, is that they are dead last in the away table. They have 9 points from 15 games. That is such a shocking return, and that's why they're in danger, is because on the road they can't grind out the results in the way that they can kind of put teams away at home. And so now they are in real danger, especially now that Dundee have shown that they're not dead and buried. They're going to have to fight tooth and nail. I think they're not going to finish last, because I think that one is reserved for a very special team, very special St. Johnstone. But they don't want to be in a relegation playoff. That is humiliating for a manager of Derek McInnes's stature and ambition, who not so long ago, and maybe currently, had his name linked with the Rangers job. That's not a great look on your job application to say, I would like to make this step up, and I'm currently sat in 11th.
Yeah, exactly. They're only 1 point clear of Dundee, and this is a team being managed by the current manager of the season, because obviously they've not gave out the awards for this season, but he won it last year. He's just that guy. I think he's maybe a victim of his own success. Look, he'd had a really good spell with Aberdeen, but ultimately only won one trophy, and that's what you're judged on at the end of the day, and you're certainly going to be judged even further if you take a. Take aside the size of Kilmarnock down to the championship through the playoff, which look, they're not too big to go down. They went down via the playoffs when they get relegated. Was that 3 or 4 years ago, maybe? And I think as well, the sides in the championship are chomping at a bit to come up. Livingston, Ayr, and Falkirk could be either one of them that they'll probably play. So it's no guarantee. You can't. Less, I can't even talk. You can't rest on your laurels when it comes to survival in the Premiership. One team that though know about the playoffs all too well is Ross County. They survived by the skin of their teeth, if we cast our minds back to that tie against Partick Thistle. They travelled to the capital city to play Hearts. Coming up short though, in a 2-0 defeat. Look, Finlay, we've talked about how much Hibs' fortunes have changed. How much has Hearts' fortune changed under Neil Critchley?
Massively. That beginning of the season was dire. They were 11th. Thank God there was one team worse than them, and that was Hibs, which is incredibly odd to say at this stage in the season. But there were doubts, and people might forget this. The better Hearts do, the quicker they'll forget that the football was not fantastic when he came in. It was definitely, you'd see what he was trying to do. It just necessarily wasn't working every time. They lacked consistency. But the real difference to me has been Kabangu. And other players have stepped up. Other players have been good. But Kabangu's goals have been so important. And when Shankland has kind of gone missing, his goal tally at the end of the season, by the way, when you look, compare this season, last season, people are going to think he's been injured all year. They're not going to understand that he's played almost as many games. But Kamagu's come in, he's been a fantastic signing. And they'll need to use, I think, every bit of that Saint-Gilloise connection to make sure he stays next year, although that seems unlikely. But Shankland's, I assume, is leaving in the summer. And it's too soon to rely on James Wilson, another player that I think is fantastic. Because young players, they blow hot and cold. And we've seen that with Eggemann, who's a few years older. So to have a player like that, then you know what to build around. Then you could feed him. And I think he's a player who's capable of hitting that 20, 25 goal mark in a full Premier League season at least. But overall, I think the side are buying into what he's doing. And I think the fans are starting to see that actually they could go somewhere. And like you said, a fantastic turnaround. They are. But the thing I wanted to point out, though, about Hearts is that we have three games left. And their three games, I think, are perhaps more interesting than any other team because they are sixth, right? They're 1 point ahead of Motherwell in seventh. Their next game, they have Celtic. I think everyone assumes that they'll lose, although, given that Celtic have probably already won the league, you never know how they're going to turn up. But then they have Dundee United at home. And Dundee United, despite being shocking at the weekend, are the third best team in the league on the road. And then finally, they have Motherwell away. So that is just a 1 point gap with Motherwell. And that's, those three games are so important and actually so difficult that difference between them finishing sixth and seventh could be what people make of Neil Critchley's season overall. It could make a world of difference. It doesn't matter how well he's done up till now. That could completely change things if fans have to put up, because I don't think Hearts fans, they've been living the good life. Let's be honest. This is a club that have always been in and amongst the kind of, and apart, they've had relegation, but they expect to be up there. They expect, and I think they see themselves as Scotland's third best side. That's what they believe is theirs. I absolutely do not think they want to be in the bottom half of the table come the end of the season.
No, absolutely not. But you touched on the magnitude of the games coming up. Even that game against Ross County is massive. There was only, going into the game, there was only 1 point separating them. So to win games like that could be massive when it comes to the top six, decide final places being decided. But it's the games going forward, isn't it? The other bigger ones, Dundee United. I think it's going to be in the TV. I just checked the kickoff time, it's 2:30, so I would suggest it's going to be on TV. All eyes will be in that one. You touched on Kabangu, that's his eighth goal since joining in January. I think at the least they can do it is probably try getting for the whole season next year. I think it's going to be a very exciting summer for Hearts, because I've went on record and before saying I thought the signings they made at the start of the season, like your Jan Danda, your Blair Spittles, so they were going to be the guys who came in and absolutely changed the team. But it's more the January signings. Is it Carton, the guy that scored twice against Dundee from Bran? He signed in January, and then Kabangu, who signed in January. These are guys Neil Critchley signed. So to give, I think him, when he's got a full summer and his own scouting team to get the players he wants, I'm going to say no. I think Hearts are going to finish third next season. That's a bold claim, considering they might not be in the top six this year. But I really like Neil Critchley, and he's clearly got an eye for a player, but we'll get into predictions in the summer. But
I'm going to write them down somewhere.
now I've said that
Yeah.
they're going to get relegated this year. George Grant sealed the deal. He slid onto the end of a ball to make it 2-0 just before the final whistle. It's a huge blow. We just kind of alluded to it there for Ross County's hopes for a top six finish. I don't think they've had top six. I think it's 2016 last time, unless I'm mistaken, and they go to like 2 years ago, maybe. I mean, stupid. Oh well. But they have been impressive this season compared to the last. They were poor last season, and you kind of just, I think a lot of people would have had them near the foot of the table in their pre-season predictions. How impressed have you been by them? Because they've already equaled last season's point tally.
Very. They managed to kind of turn off or banish that away form of hoodoo. They looked like one of the better teams on the road, and then they started to lose at home, and then they fixed that. And now, the kind of matching of the points they received last season at this stage is already very impressive. I think top six is out of reach for them. I know it's only 4 points, but that's a tough amount of points to pull back with just 3 games left. But I think they can be very happy with the season so far. Although, once that split happens, it's kind of like the bottom half of the table turns into like the Hunger Games, and everyone is just kind of pulling each other's teeth and nail and hair out. So then you're never too far away. When you're in the bottom six, you're never far away from being that relegation playoff. And I think that's, and you might remember this better than I do, given your status as our resident mystic and mega mind. That's what happened to Dundee United. I think they just got pushed into that bottom six, and then they just fell and fell and fell. And that can happen to anyone, especially Ross County, who know, as you said, all too well what it's like to be down there. So great season. They definitely will not forget what it's like to have been there, and they will do their absolute best to not have to play a Livingston or an Ayr, which is, I think, the two that they're likely to play, because I think that would put the fear of God in most players in that bottom half.
Yeah, and I really like that comparison with Dundee United. I think their situation was they were down there, but it was like they weren't expected to go down, and then they just never won any games. I think they lost all the 5 games in the after the split, which put them down. One team though who faced similar woes looked like they could be going down. St Johnstone, they hosted Aberdeen to a 0-0 absolute classic. And we've talked about this one for years in the battle of the Scottish Cup. Semi-finalists, obviously St Johnstone are playing Celtic, Aberdeen are playing aforementioned Hearts. Look, we talk about how important home form is for a side battling relegation, but Aberdeen have only lost once in their last 16 visits to Perth. Is McDermott Park just too easy of a place to go? Like, it doesn't have that fear factor that other stadiums, especially for teams at that end of the table, does, you know what I mean?
I would say yes and no. In terms of the fear factor, you're absolutely right. I don't think anyone is afraid to go to McDermott Park. I think they're just annoyed to have to travel that far. And I mean, even going to Aberdeen seems like it's worse, but it's not. There's just something about that trip that makes every player, and I'm sure fan, want to kind of get out of there as soon as possible. But they have that point against Aberdeen. They got three against County, against Motherwell. I think they got one against Hibs. And they do have two defeats, and I think that was Hearts and Dundee. Those are their last results. I don't think that's atrocious, but like you said, that's not, they are bottom of the league, and that's not going to cut it if they're trying to get out. I feel like they are finishing bottom this year, and I think that, I don't know. You're right, though. It should be a much more difficult place to play. The least you can do is try and get your points at home. And they're not just doing that. I just think their squad quality and style of play doesn't lend itself to that.
I think the one thing they can take maybe take sale loss from, but again, it's not guaranteed. If they go down, I think the quality manager like Vallakarai, he if it's the players, obviously they'll need to make cuts to the squad and all that if they go down. But I think he's got the quality to get them back up, but it's provided it's not gonna be an easy task. It was a dull affair. Obviously it's I was gonna ask who will have felt the brunt of dropping 2 points more? Obviously, St Johnstone, if it's the obvious as I have plenty of times on this podcast. But at the same time, that's a big 2 points drop for Aberdeen though. Like they're battling out, they're trying to get a row of wins under the belt. But it's just you can't predict what's going to happen with Aberdeen. They never got their classic late goal like they did. Is third place becoming less realistic by the week, Finlay?
Yeah, I think I maybe see them for fourth, but something did die inside of Aberdeen during that run, and all the new players have done well. I think maybe they're just waiting to see this, try and put this season behind them, because I don't know if they'll say it, but it must have been some kind of trauma to endure that run. And I just don't necessarily think they have that quality to finish third. I think Hibs are better than them, but I think they will get top six because they're 5 points ahead of Motherwell. And if they can hold Motherwell to a draw, that means 5 points to come back to kind of turn around in two games. I think that's a bridge too far for Motherwell. So top six, I think, is theirs. It's just a case of maybe holding on, seeing if they can get a European playoff. Tilly gets more time to make some signings who have come good in January. The ones that have come in have played well, and I think they will double down on supporting him. And interesting to see what they can do next year. I just find it difficult to, no matter how many games we are away from those or that run, I still can't shake off that association with that losing run and what that would have done to them, if that makes sense.
No, I agree with what you're saying. I spoke about McDermott Park not being an easy place to, not being too easy of a place to go, but I think in the race for third, team like Celtic, for instance, they've not lost at Pittodrie for years. I mean, like, even in that COVID season where everybody was beating Celtic, Aberdeen still couldn't, you know what I mean? So I don't think, and then with the way the split's looking, you'd obviously some teams might have to go to one stadium three times and they only go to theirs once, but Celtic are doing another trip to Pittodrie. You wouldn't have confidence in Aberdeen getting a win, maybe get a draw, but maybe not a win, depending how if Celtic have wrapped up the league or not. And then a lot of other teams, I think, are definitely not afraid of Aberdeen like they were in the early stage of the season. Whereas on the flip side with Hibs, teams are scared of them right now. That's just the nature of football, though, isn't it? But I think Hibs would need to travel to Celtic Park, I think, if I'm right. And then I don't know if they have to go to Ibrox or not, but I fancy Hibs for it, definitely. But that wraps up the recap of the weekend's coverage. But as always, Finlay, I've done you a guess of where it is.
Alex.
Old Firm themed-ish. By that, I mean he is played for Rangers. So, well, I'll kick it off. He started his career at Rangers. And just take a guess whenever you think you've got it. I think you're going to get this one quite easily. There's one team that you'll just get it off right away. He then left Rangers to join Tottenham Hotspur.
Oh, wait, hold on. Alan Hutton?
Oh, he's got it. I know it's too easy. I thought you were going to get it when I said Mallorca, but he's got it.
Oh,
It's that. It's too niche. You know what I mean? He made 50 caps for Scotland. I never realised he
yeah, I think he
played
was.
as
I
much
think
as that.
he's an unheralded player. I don't think he necessarily gets much credit because it was at a time. And think about it, we don't necessarily have that many over the years, that many players playing for good Premier League clubs. But Alan Hutton was doing it in a time when I couldn't name you that many other ones. To be honest, I know Craig Gordon was there, started well, injured, but that was a great thing for Scottish football to be able to show that they could produce kind of higher end Premier League caliber players. So I think he definitely deserves credit for that.
Yeah, and I realised how long he was at Aston Villa. He must have seen everything.
Yeah.
But well, Finlay, you got that right. If MD was wondering, they also played for Sunderland, Aston Villa, Nottingham Forest, Mallorca, and Bolton. So quite travelled down south. I always thought he'd come back to Rangers because he was linked to them all the time, but just never happened for him.
Yeah.
It's weird to think he played in the same Scotland teams as Craig Gordon, and Craig Gordon still played for Scotland. You know what I mean?
Gordon is going to be there when he's 58, I think. This,
But
when does he retire? There's no sign that he's going to retire.
he's 42 now, isn't he? And he's still getting the squad. So, and then even at that, he could drop down a level. But I think he'll just hang up.
Yeah. I think he's been there. He's done that.
Well, that wraps up. Hope you've had a lovely weekend watching the football, and I hope you have a lovely rest of your week listening to us. See you every Monday. Well, this is going out on the Tuesday. But I think we'll be back to Monday at 4 p.m. next week. And I hope you enjoy watching the Scotland game. Cheers and goodbye.